Friends, hear what the Spirit is saying to the church this day. A reading from Psalm 139, verses 1 through 18. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways, even before a word is on my tongue. O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in, behind and before, and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your Spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as day, for darkness is as light to you. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works that I know very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for me, when none of them as yet existed. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God! How vast is the sum of them! I try to count them. They are more than the sand. I come to the end. I am still with you. And a reading from Romans 8, 18 to 30, from the New International Reader's Version. What we are suffering now is nothing compared with our future glory. Everything God created looks forward to the future. That will be the time when his children appear in their full and final glory. The created world was held back from fulfilling its purpose, but this was not the result of its own choice. It was planned that way by the one who held it back. God planned to set the created world free. He didn't want it to rot away. Instead, God wanted it to have the same freedom and glory that his children have. We know that all that God created has been groaning. It is in pain as if it were giving birth to a child. The created world continues to groan even now. And that's not all. We have the Holy Spirit as the promise of future blessing, but we also groan inside ourselves. We do this as we look forward to the time when God adopts us as full members of his family. Then he'll give us everything he has for us. We will raise our bodies and give glory to them. That's the hope we had when we were saved. But hope that can be seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? We hope for what we don't have yet. So we are patient as we wait for it. In the same way, the Holy Spirit helps us when we are weak. We don't know what we should pray for, but the Spirit himself prays for us. He prays through groans too deep for words. God, who looks into our hearts, knows the mind of the Spirit, and the Spirit prays for God's people just as God wants him to pray. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. He appointed them to be saved in keeping with his purpose. God planned that those he had chosen would become like his son. In that way, Christ will be the first and most honored among many brothers and sisters. And those God has planned for, he has also appointed to be saved. Those he appointed, he has made right with himself. To those he has made right with himself, he has given his glory. This is the story of life for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. How's everyone doing today? Wasn't as set up as I thought I was, apparently. Go Good morning. My name is Quinn Gormley, and I was asked here about a month or so ago by Emily, who I know through Pilgrim Lodge, although I was reminded of that only this morning. In my professional life, I serve as the executive director of a nonprofit based out of Portland called the Maine Transgender Network, or Maine Transnet for short, and we are a community-based organization that's dedicated to supporting and empowering transgender people to create a world where they can thrive. And we do that mostly through building peer-based support networks. We have about 30 support groups across the state of Maine, from as far south as Sanford up to Dover Foxcroft, and we're very excited to be starting one in Presque Isle in the next couple of months. Despite having a very finite and small amount of resources, we have a really wonderful crew, and we've grown a lot over the last couple of years, and we have the distinct privilege of actually being the largest transgender peer support network in the United States. Which is exciting for us, terrifying for states with more people than Maine, I think. But I do a lot of work with Maine Transnet, and I have the honor and privilege, I think, of being the person in the state of Maine who knows the most trans people. And so I get to talk about trans people all the time. And I also have a great love for my church. I've grown up in the United Church of Christ. I live up in Damariscotta and worship there, and have called Pilgrim Lodge a very holy place throughout my life. And the past 2 years, I've had the privilege of being the dean of Camp Pride at Pilgrim Lodge, which is actually an interfaith camp for LGBTQ high school students that brings them together into the kind of loving community that is Pilgrim Lodge, in a place that provides a unique spiritual context for them. So it's been very exciting. And so before I jump into it, to what I have to say, I have one quick question before I start, which is, how many of you think you've met a trans person before? You can raise your hand. All right. Well, for those of you not raising your hands, hi. It's nice to meet you. You can check that off your bucket list now. So as we're in church today, instead of giving you some long, dull academic 101 training, Emily asked if I would instead share a bit of my own personal story and ground it in the context of Scripture. And so I will do that to the best of my ability this morning. And thank you so much for having me. I was staring at my reflection in the glare of someone else's windshield. I was waiting in a small dirt pull-off on a back road that claimed to be a parking lot. It was getting dark. My face lit up with the bright lights for just a moment. I remember thinking to myself, "Good God, I am never going to get all of this sawdust out of my hair." Kim pulled up and flashed the headlights of her clunky old Subaru Outback. It was rusty, held together entirely by bumper stickers, and smelled distinctly of dog. It was exactly the car I had come to expect from every 40-something lesbian in my life, and I had a lot of those. I closed the door to the car with a metallic thud and buckled up. "Sorry I'm late. I got held up with Sadie," the aforementioned dog. Kim mumbled as we started down the road towards church. The sun was just falling behind the hills, and rain was drizzling down from a mostly cloudy sky. The whole landscape had adopted that dreary and stark attitude so common to rural Maine in March. It was the perfect evening for a Maundy Thursday service, a perfect evening for death and resurrection. There was a thud, followed by the sound of vibrating metal. We'd driven through a pothole. "So, how do you like it?" Kim asked. She meant my visitation. I was applying to be an apprentice at Kim's organization, the Carpenter's Boat Shop, which is an intentional community that happens to be in my hometown that is centered on the construction of small wooden boats, skiffs mostly, and on supporting their apprentices through times of significant transition in their lives. As part of the application process, I had to first spend a few days visiting and working to see if I really fit in. "I really like it here," I said, one final jolt as we turned into pavement. "I'm glad. Anyways, part of the point of this trip is so I can get to know you better and maybe talk about anything you think I ought to know. So yeah, tell me about yourself, Tim." A feeling like being punched in the gut echoed through my torso. It was quickly replaced by butterflies and knots. I'd been waiting for this moment all week. I had to tell her. I had to put into words this idea that was growing heavier and heavier every year in my soul. "I'm not supposed to be a boy," and I refused to become a man. It was a truth that permeated every cell of my body, seeped through my pores, and into every moment of my life. It was consuming at times, infuriating at others. But outside of my immediate family and some of my very close friends, I'd never put it into words. I wasn't sure how. My chest filled with a powerful sensation I couldn't quite describe. It was almost vocal in quality. My gut ached. "Tim, still with us?" Kim asked. We had just crossed over the Pamunkey River and were now heading up Route 130. I had apparently spaced out. "Tim," she asked again, and I jolted back into myself. "Yeah, sorry. You know, that might be a good place to start, that name." "What about it?" "Well, it's not my name." "It's not? Well, what do you mean?" I grabbed nervously at my pant legs, a long string of expletives racing through my head. We were passing the transfer station in Bristol, and all I could think to myself is this really where this is going to happen? "I'm not gay," I blurted out, my cheeks tingling. "You're not?" Kim asked, confused. I had come out rather loudly in a sermon to my church several years earlier. "Well, okay, I don't know about that. Maybe I am. Really, I just like people. But it's not important. It's more about who I am than who I love." "Oh," Kim said, filling in the blanks in our conversation together. "So you're transgender?" "I guess," I mumbled, feeling a touch ashamed. "So you're a girl." "Woman," I quickly corrected. "The distinction matters." "Ah, well, okay." There was a long pause. "So what is your name?" My face lit up like dawn after a storm. "Quinn. Quinn Aline Gormley," I smiled. In the coming months after that time with Kim, I had the opportunity to share myself with a lot of people in my life. And I would come to eventually join the community at the Carpenter's Boat Shop and embrace a time of transition as I further entered into a more authentic reality of who I am. Throughout my life, I've had a lot of opportunities to get familiar with a feeling, a vocal feeling in my chest as I've come to understand it. And I've struggled to come up with words of how to describe it throughout my life. I remember distinctly being 4 years old. For the first time, someone told me that what I was wearing was inappropriate. I had this purple tutu that I wore everywhere out of the house. Why on earth my parents were surprised when I came out, I don't know. But I remember a preschool teacher telling me distinctly as we were splitting into those gender-marked lines in school, saying that I couldn't stand with the girls because I was a boy. And I was unpleasantly confused because that was not how I understood myself to be, but I moved as I was told. And I learned in that moment that what I was feeling was wrong, and something was wrong with me. I went on for a couple of years like that, and I am the child of librarians and geeks and nerds, and I watched only the Discovery Channel growing up. And there was a documentary on when I was about 7 years old about transgender people, and I learned suddenly that there was a word for how it was that I was feeling. And I loved that word. And it felt so incredibly empowering until I told someone that that's what I was. And then I learned that it's not okay to be that. And so I started to hide. And I hid for a long time, going throughout life as a transgender person in the closet can be an upsetting experience. Growing up in a small town full of oyster farmers and fishermen and tourists, there's not a lot of opportunity to find role models as to who we are and to find spaces of acceptance. And so I hid myself and I found ways to express who I was in private. That feeling within my chest got continually louder throughout the next decade or so. At the age of 14, I came out to my church and to my high school as a gay person, which for some reason I thought would be more acceptable. I think I was the first out gay person in my high school, and I had the unique privilege of earning the title of, excuse the language here, of town faggot, which got me beat up a whole bunch. And that feeling, that vocal feeling in my chest was present in a lot of moments throughout those years. It was present walking into a locker room before gym, before getting the shit beat out of me. It was present as we got put into more and more gendered spaces that were just not the fit where I belong. and it was present throughout these regular moments of every day that should have been, that were really ordinary, but yet were weighted down by something. And yet I still struggled quite a bit to figure out how to put that into words. Throughout this time, I was raised in a church that was not open and affirming at those times. And I learned from congregants and from clergy members and from others in my life as I lived through those two marriage equality campaigns that we had in the state of Maine, as well as a non-discrimination campaign, that there were not allies to be had in the spaces that I was looking for them. And I thought that because the people of God were telling me that I didn't belong, that for some reason that meant I didn't belong to God. And so I started to form some kind of resentment towards God. I hated a God whose words seemed to not line up with the actions of God's people. And I hated the idea that I felt like this was in some way God's fault, that God had somehow made a mistake despite being told that that's not possible, and that God had somehow decided to cause me pain throughout the course of my life. And I was filled with rage for much of my youth. And I acted out in many ways, and I tried to find the best ways that I could to cope, often unsuccessfully. I remember distinctly, though, that I was losing the ability to keep that vocal feeling in my chest quiet. And I'd come to think of it as not so much a word or anything, but just this kind of groaning sensation deep inside my bones that I felt at all times. And it would come up at some moments and it would be unbearably loud. At other times, it would feel more like an ache. At other times, it would feel like fury. At others, a deep sadness. But it was always present, and it had this connotation to it of incompleteness, of not being done. And I wasn't sure what to do with that, but at some point, I guess I was really bad at hiding it, and I blurted it out to my folks and to some of my close friends. And although I can't say that my parents were enthusiastic when I told them, I'm still confused again as to why they were surprised. Both my sibling and I are gayer than a unicorn in a glitter strap. And have not been quiet about that throughout our lives. But they at least had the good sense to take me to a doctor. And I remember going back and forth to this doctor in Portland at what has now become a gender clinic for transgender youth in the city. But that was, my time was well before that had been formed. And I remember distinctly fighting with my parents when I was about 15 years old because I desperately wanted to get on these things called blockers, which would put puberty on pause, basically, because puberty was understandably a bit upsetting. And so I remember fighting back and forth for about a year with my parents about whether or not I could go on these because they had a long-term effect of basically eliminating fertility that my parents weren't enthusiastic about, seeing my incredibly queer sibling who was loudly not having children and hoping that I would be the one to supply them. And the doctor required me to get a consent form signed by both of my parents for that. And I never understood the context of the conversation because I was shouting loudly, I am a girl, I am a young woman, that's not how I want to have children anyway. And can we stop worrying about me losing this ability? I'm already grieving my own barrenness. But they didn't agree. So I forged my mom's signature. And I remember distinctly that the day that I got my first set of pills called Spiro, that this groaning sensation changed for the first time in my life. And it felt different, almost as a groan that was turning into a prayer and into a song, and it felt incredibly euphoric for just a couple of minutes. And though I had to go back to a life where I was still hiding and still adjusting with my family to who I was, there was this wonderful, beautiful moment. I've probably had the opportunity to meet a couple thousand transgender people at this point in my life, and what I see in the stories of our lives and what I see in how those stories are told in the media, they seem to be radically different ideas. What we see in media about trans people is this obsession with our medical lives, the sensationalizing stories about how we physically alter our bodies, and it seems that we're always presented as being in some form of escape, from something that we don't want to be. And I think there is truth that there is sometimes discomfort with how we live in this world and how we occupy our bodies that can be alarming to us. But I don't know many trans people who think about that as the first thing on their minds when they're taking the huge risk of coming out, oftentimes in incredibly isolated and rural communities here in Maine. When I talk to trans people and when I hear other stories, what I usually hear is exceptional hope for something that's yet to come. They're hoping not to get away from the bad, but to get to this euphoric singing in our souls that we can experience. It comes in a lot of forms, and as I've transitioned in my life, I found it on a daily basis. There's some really wonderful things. There is the joy of walking through the world, being perceived as who you are. There is the pleasure of great hormones rushing through your body and taking pleasure in being bloated and moody all the goddamn time. It's wonderful. There is that pure ecstasy of taking a bra off at the end of the day. There is that wonderful feeling of falling in love with someone who sees you as you are and respects you as you are. The joy of walking down the aisle in a gown that I had bought. My husband and I got married at the boat shop itself because it was such a special place to us. We also got married on 2 days' notice because we had made a bet to one another that if the election in 2016 went the way it did, we'd get married, and we were just joking until we weren't. throughout my life, I've had these wonderful moments. I think about not long after I came out to my siblings, they took me to my first Pride Festival here in Portland. And I was feeling disgusted and ashamed about who I was and about how I felt that my existence would always in some way be qualified and never really be respected as what I wanted it to be, even by myself. And I remember us walking as a float full of drag queens and dancers from one of the gay nightclubs in Portland that has sadly since closed. We're driving by, and glitter was just going absolutely everywhere, which is really one of my favorite parts about Pride. And my sibling pulls me aside, and they said to me, "You know, Quinn, there's a reason why we do that, why we throw all that glitter around. It's because no matter how hard they scrub, no matter how hard they try and wash it off, the people who don't want to see us exist in this world will never be able to wash away the proof of our existence, and neither will we." And that was a changing point for me, because that was the first time that anyone had ever told me that there was a purpose to sparkling, that there is a purpose to finding beauty in ourselves, and that however hard we try to eliminate it, neither us nor anyone else could make it go away. In the last couple of years, I've had the opportunity to talk to God a lot more about my own existence. And I will admit, once you get to know the good parts, the bad parts seem to fall into a different context. For me, I believe in a God who loves the creative process. And I believe that our bodies are gifts of grace given to us freely. And that how we choose to occupy our bodies follows a very similar process to how we choose to live in response to grace. Looking for meaning and purpose in this experience, I look often to other places where I think we experience the grace and gifts of God, and I look particularly towards communion as a source of inspiration, because that most common, that offensively ordinary, but that essentially holy thing that we do as a community of faith to remember and to acknowledge and to experience the grace of God has an interesting part to it that I think goes unacknowledged. The elements of bread and wine are what is considered holy and what is considered the body of God. And I've always found it interesting that we choose these things, because God did not make bread. God made wheat. And God did not make wine. God made grapes. And so God, even in the most holy of experiences, is involving us in the creative process of grace and spirit. And so, in that way, I think that creation itself is a sacrament that we experience with God, and that how we choose to embody ourselves in our lives is a ritual of prayer. And that ritual and that prayer comes as a response from that deep groaning within us as God is pulling out those inward knitted parts that he made and trying to tell us that we are still being created and that we are part of that process with God. As I came more into myself and I became comfortable in speaking with others about my identity, the dichotomy between being a person who is transgender and being a person of Christian faith was alarming to me because I felt that my church had not, even though they had since gone through an open and affirming process, that they had really not understood the spiritual context to which I was living. And so I remember specifically saying, I need to do some kind of ceremony to see this. I need to practice my faith and my life together because creation is something that we get better at every day, like music. And so I spoke with my pastor and I spoke with the director of the boat shop, who's also a clergy member, and we decided that reaffirming my baptism would be the appropriate choice. And being the masochist that I am, I decided that doing a immersion baptism in late October in Maine was a good life choice. And my church gathered by the shores of Biscay Pond in Damariscotta, and everyone who was with me at the boat shop and many of my friends came together, and my pastor named me for this for the congregation and for the community of faith that I belong to, and they named me as well. And when I came back up under the incredibly cold water, which I think the only person with more right to complain about that than me was the pastor, who didn't have a choice in it. But as I came back up from that incredibly cold water and I looked out at the lake, I saw that a whole bunch of the congregation had come in kayaks and they had color coordinated it to make a rainbow around me. And so in things that I have learned from this is that God reaches into us through groans, and that those incredibly powerful feelings that we have of not yet being done, of being in some way incomplete, is not a sign of being worthless. It is not a sign of being wrong or the result of a mistake. It is instead an invitation from our Creator to create with them. And it's a unique honor to be part of that process, and it's something holy. So thank you very much.